Welcome to episode 75.3 of Up in the Baseball Perspectives podcast. It is one of our mini shows from the winter meetings from Dallas, Texas. I'm Kevin Goldstein. With me from Dallas, Texas is Jason Parks. Jason, say hello to the internet.
Howdy.
And a special guest, Baseball Perspectives' very own, Jay Jaffe.
Howdy.
It doesn't sound the same.
No.
Yeah, you're not Texan. And we have a good show for you. We have three interviews, as always. We have Mark Gonzalez from the Chicago Tribune to talk about what's going on with the White Sox, which is, of course, not a good thing. We'll talk to Susan Slusser of the San Francisco Chronicle about the new dress code, and she'll explain to you why I am right about sandals. And then
Jeff
Passan's totally wrong. And then, you know, we tried to do this on Monday. She declined the interview request, but tonight, our final show, we'll end the show with an interview with Yolanda, the media room security lady. So this is our last show. Let's wrap this up here. Yesterday's show was very Pujols heavy, and today Pujols didn't sign with the Marlins. Did something else, and they signed C.J. Wilson, it looks like.
And Mark Burley.
They signed two pitchers. Now, you were talking before we started recording about why we kind of need this from the Marlins.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the end of the soap operas in New York and on the south side of Chicago with the White Sox, you know, we need a couple new soap operas for some programming. And, you know, we're going to lose the L.A. soap opera pretty soon, too, once McCourt sells the team. So having new good soap operas on the horizon is good. And I think we've definitely got a hit in the Miami Marlins with Ozzy and all that. I think that the Red Sox with Bobby Valentine certainly have potential to be a soap opera. So programming schedule for next spring and summer is looking pretty good.
Jason, obviously you're a baseball guy, but you do a lot of Ranger stuff. C.J. Wilson going away, I don't think you're surprised, but how are the Rangers going to react to this in the end?
Well, I mean, I don't think that they were prepared to go 6 years. If a team's going to go 6 years, you kind of have to just tip your cap and say good luck, you know. I think bringing Wilson back maybe 4 years at 60, maybe even going to that fifth year, I'd be hesitant to do that, to go 5 years on him. It puts a lot more pressure on, you know, Holland and Harrison to maintain, like I mentioned the other night, and for Feliz to, you know, actually step into that role and come out of the gate strong, for Rogando not to have any sort of, you know, issue in his second year as a starter, you know, after the workload increase and, you know, some of the mechanical issues that I still think he possesses that would limit his effectiveness in a rotation for the long term. I mean, I thought second half of the year he wasn't especially sharp. So I'm not surprised that they didn't sign him. I mean, I didn't think that they had that much interest unless, you know, he was willing to accept like 4 and 60, which I think would have worked.
Do we have a year figure on Wilson yet?
It looks like so.
I mean, sorry, a dollar figure.
90, I think, maybe?
690.
That sounds cool.
I'm kind of making things up.
Well, it's interesting.
I heard that 2 days ago.
Well, it's interesting because for AAV, that's lower than Burnett and Lackey. I think a lot of us figured that he would be, you know, around Burnett and Lackey, but maybe, you know.
The 6 years makes a difference.
I guess the 6 years does make a difference, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this is the last day, and Wednesday always kind of sucks because, like, Monday and Tuesday are fun, and you're excited. And Wednesday, you're like, okay, I've had enough. And Jason, you spent 9 hours today sitting very close to a menorah.
I did.
Sitting with a menorah, writing.
Yeah, I wasn't just sitting with the menorah.
Hey, getting in touch with your inner Jew.
Right. I mean, it's the closest I've been to religion since ever.
This is your first winter meetings for
since 2004.
For seven years.
I was doing it as a blogger in 2003 and 2004, and you know, now I'm here with a credential and with a BBWAA card, and it's very different on that note. And it's
how is it different? What were your expectations, and how were your first winter meetings as a legit dude like?
Well, it's, you know, for one thing, I think many more people have seen my work. I have people coming up to me and saying they've seen my work and they like my work, or they've seen me on Twitter and they like, you know, the stuff I say, or they just like the mustache, which is still bizarre to me, but flattering and funny. You know, I'm older, I'm wiser, I'm, you know, less shy, more outgoing, able to go up. Like yesterday, I introduced myself to a few big name national writers, and today I did the same again and got a complete serving of cold shoulder on one of them. But you know, that was the, hey, I think I probably needed a little dose of humility after a string of unfettered successes. So. You know, don't let this go too much to your head.
Well, I mean, just let me ask you this. I mean, as a blogger and as, you know, someone coming up, I obviously, if you're on Twitter, there's obviously a lot of snark on what some of the national guys do. But then you're here and you meet
and
them.
They work.
And other than you
watch them work,
right? But other than the one blow off, not only do you see how hard they work, they tend to be really nice.
Yeah, I would say so. There are a lot of people who are just extremely nice, and for me, part of it's had to be a little bit of growing up and being adult and professional and playing nice as well. But yeah, some of these guys, they are really nice in person, and it's much tougher to envision a future situation where I would like outright slam them. I would have to be, much more, I think, professional in my criticism if I was going to call somebody out. But like, and also, I'm impressed by the stamina of the big name guys.
Jesus,
yesterday we were standing and I got introduced by Kevin to John Heyman, and John was talking about how he was going to be there till 3 a.m. and he was going to be back there at 7:30. And you put those facts together. He's like, it's like being college finals against. Like, you put those facts together, you start to understand why these guys get where they are.
Yeah.
Because if you can do that for a week and overdrive at the busiest time of the year, you're going to rise to the top. I mean, when I was doing the World Series just from home, covering it for Baseball Prospectus and staying up till 5 a.m. to file my stories, and they were, on the front page every day. I mean, I could get a little taste of that, but my stamina was running out pretty, after a few days. But you just got to work so hard in this industry to get ahead. And that, when you see up close, I mean, one of the first games that I did the press box at Yankee Stadium, I was sitting next to Ken Rosenthal, and his hands are a blur, and he's just getting up and out of his, phone, getting up and out of his chair to take a phone call or to, coming back, and it's like the guy's just always moving, and it's impressive. I mean, when you see that, and the guys are not sitting in the press box eating potato chips and, with their feet up on the desk. They're working the game, and sometimes to the point where, you don't see a lot of eyes on the field. You just see people, looking at their laptops, looking at their Blackberries or their iPhones. I mean, they're always moving to put stories together and to, get in touch with sources and to, pull reports together. So it's just the whole experience this year of having a credential in the BBWAA has been very interesting in that front.
And the final act of the winter meetings will be the Rule 5 draft tomorrow. And as I tweeted this morning, if you are excited in the very least about players you might gain or lose in the Rule 5 draft, you're way too excited about the Rule 5 draft. I have talked to so many teams who have basically said to me, yeah, we haven't really looked yet. No, I don't know if there's going to be anybody. And we ran to a team on the way to dinner tonight, and they said they were going overnight, but they're pretty sure that there's just not a thing there. And just remember, if you're a Mets fan, you remember how crazy you were when you lost Elvin Ramirez last year? The guy didn't pitch an inning last year. It doesn't matter. It's nothing's big. The biggest Rule 5 win was probably Martinez with the Phillies last. So I have not written anything on it. I actually was supposed to write something for ESPN, and I talked them out of it. I talked them out of my own money.
Like
so I was like, I don't have enough guys for you. There's just nothing good. So you guys, we're all out of here tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And then we'll all rest.
I'm not even going to be here for the draft, so.
You're leaving in the morning?
Yeah, I'm leaving in the morning. My flight's at 11 o'clock.
You're going to miss the Rule 5.
I'm going to suck it up. I'll be following it on Twitter.
So for the final time from Dallas, we wish you adieu. Jason and I will have a full show for you at some point next week, and we'll tell stories of seeing Verducci and Ken Rosenthal's Cheshire Cat smile because he knew who the mystery team was and things like that. So thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you next week. Here with Mark Gonzalez, the fantastic writer for the Chicago Tribune. Mark, I was on your flight, and your flight was on time. Do you consider me a lucky charm on your winter meeting travel?
Absolutely. Anytime you can get out of O'Hare and land on time, you got to look for good things, and you certainly brought them.
Now, you actually had something to write about on day one with the White Sox trading Sergio Santos for Nestor Molina. Do you get the sense that that's kind of just the first little firecracker and what's going to be a pretty explosive offseason for them?
That's the perfect way to describe it, although moving Santos, I think, was a little more than a firecracker, probably a cherry bomb, just because he's young in terms of baseball experience, pitching experience. The fact they had him under control for the next 6 years, and let's face it, good, dependable closers are hard to find, and I credit Toronto for identifying him, being persistent, and getting him. So, but having said all that, I think there's going to be more chunks that are going to be chipped away from the White Sox in the next few weeks.
The people have been talked about have been obviously John Danks, Matt Thornton, Carlos Quinn, kind of been the big three. I mean, what do you think? How many of those three do you think will be with the White Sox come spring training?
I would think maybe one. That would be Danks, and I wouldn't be surprised if they move some other parts. You know, Gordon Beckham's a guy that Kenny Williams admitted in August that it's not too early to say that his career is at a crossroads because he's regressed, and that's not what they signed up for. He's changed the landscape of their lineup. They really thought that each year he'd be a number two hitter. That's failed miserably. And despite being a terrific fielder at second base, I mean, you can get a lot of guys like that and give you more pop at second. So he's a guy that's under the microscope right now as far as I'm concerned.
The White Sox won a World Series in 2005. It's the winter of 2011, and they might be the team in the worst shape right now. I mean, if someone had to ask you, you know, if the single PowerPoint slide with a couple of bullet points of how the hell this happened, what would be your reasons?
I've always said after 2007 when they lost 90 games, they should have broke up the team, moved the big pieces, namely guys like Canerco and Mark Burley. I just thought that was the time to do it where those guys were still really, really in their prime, although they've still produced. I thought that was a chance you can really restock your farm system and get guys that can really help you down the stretch. Sort of like what Cleveland did a long time ago when they moved to Cologne and got guys like Grady Sizemore and Cliff Lee. I thought that was a terrific move by Mark Shapiro. But having said all that, the White Sox hung on. They got a division title the following year, but they've had three straight non-postseasons. And since 2005, they've only won one playoff game. And I think that's very alarming. And I think just they played a high-risk game trying to invest all the money on the big league roster rather than invest some in the farm system with the draft. And they're paying the price right now.
And overall, I mean, the Sox definitely have seemed to have lost some cachet in the city. It's still you wondered if it was going to flip after World Series. It's still a Cubs town, let's face it. I mean, are they in a position where, you know, slogging attendance, bad teams could make this get worse before it gets better?
I think that's definitely possible because you've seen attendance slide, I think, for four consecutive years. And last year was the perfect storm, just not only on the field but at the gate. They expected to get $2.5 million. They barely got over $2 million. I think that translates to a $15 million loss. And God, what could you do with $15 million right now? That, you know, to help the payroll and address needs, whether it be in the draft. Well, the Sox don't pay anyway in the draft, but just the big league roster dressing a lot of holes that they have. And I don't see it getting any better unless they can make some deals and really put themselves on sound footing because, you know, they got some tough decisions down the road as well with John Danks, you know, 1 year away from being a free agent. Gavin Floyd's under control, but he's been very mercurial. And the minor league system doesn't really have those true power arms at the higher levels.
And to finish this up here, how do you see things going with Kenny Williams in the sense that, I mean, he won a power struggle in the offseason. Ozzie went away. He kept the bill. Kenny has a reputation, I think, among people who don't do this for a living of being kind of a cranky guy, difficult to deal with. This is your job to deal with the White Sox. I mean, what does he like to deal with on a day-to-day basis?
He's an interesting study. It hasn't been all smooth dealing with him, but he's usually going to give you an answer, and certainly he did when he made the move for Santos using the word rebuilding. He's always going to roll the dice. You got to give him credit for that if you're a Sox fan, but he hasn't come up with too many aces lately, and I think he is definitely under the microscope now that Ozzie's gone, and I think they've really got to examine their whole organization, not so much personnel-wise, but the way they do business, especially in procuring talent.
Well, thanks for coming on. I'm on the 2 o'clock flight tomorrow if you want to be on time.
I might see if I can go standby just for that.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Here with the great Susan Slusser. Now, of the baseball. Now, you moved way up in the Baseball Writers Association, and there was a big announcement last night, bigger than any Pujols story, that we all have to dress well now.
Yeah, it was a Major League Baseball initiative rather than Baseball Writers. Baseball Writers really have nothing to do with this, but Major League Baseball, I think there were a number of reasons that they decided to form a committee to look at dress codes and issuing what they are as guidelines. It's not mandatory. I don't believe it's enforceable.
Okay.
I think that legally probably actually have to be somebody's employer to require them to dress in a particular way. But I think they would like to encourage baseball media to dress a little more nicely. As you know, of the four major sports professional sports leagues, baseball writers are probably
the are the biggest slobs.
I was going to say casually dressed, but okay, I'm not going to disagree with you. And it's also a warm weather sport. So you get some areas where maybe you get some scantily clad people, and I'm talking both genders. This is not, it's in no way a sort of a sexist kind of set of guidelines. You know, get male writers wearing tank tops and short shorts, and I think nobody really wants to see that, and flip-flops. And the flip-flops, a lot of people are very, you know, especially because we cover spring training, it's hot, a lot of people are like, "What? No flip-flops, that's crazy." That was actually a request from the trainers for hygiene reasons. They say they see people wearing really bad old flip-flops, their feet are falling off, they get wind up with bare feet on the clubhouse or in the dugout, and, you know, it's not hygienic.
But in previous podcasts, we had Jeff Passan on from Yahoo, and I've told him that no men should ever wear sandals.
Yes.
This is really a moral victory for me. did Jeff's wearing and support of sandals play some role here?
You know, I'd never heard from Jeff at all on this issue until after the fact, so I think I'm going to say no, but I couldn't agree with you more on men and sandals.
Victory.
I have something of a foot phobia in general, but it didn't come from me. It came from the trainers. God bless them. I don't want to see anybody's feet.
Men shouldn't wear sandals, right?
No, I don't want to see anyone's feet.
Have I mentioned what an incredible beat writer she is for the San Francisco Chronicle? You should all follow on Twitter and read every word she says because she hates sandals. So there was no impetus here, necessarily like a specific incident or an impetus, just like, hey, we're kind of slobs.
No, you know, there has been some suggestion that this was prompted by the Inez Sanchez incident with the Jets.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I don't believe that to be the case. It was not something that, there was no specific thing that we were told. I think that Major League Baseball, there were a few things that was clear right from the beginning that Major League Baseball doesn't like to see, especially from media members on the field. So we might be talking, this is obviously not just baseball writers, camera person still and video, cut-off shorts, flip-flops, and logoed apparel. I think that drives baseball nuts because they're on the field, they're in the sight of view of fans and TV cameras wearing logos of other teams, other sports teams, all sorts of things, and they don't like that. That's understandable.
Sure.
I don't have a strong feeling about that, although nobody wants to see anybody wearing that team's logos when they're operating in a professional journalism capacity. That's sort of not what we do.
Right.
But I think, you know, there are a lot of issues and none of them were raised, but I think that with this now, baseball can say, well, we have guidelines. And we gave the guidelines out to all the sports editors and to all the TV directors. And if there's an issue, it's not our fault. You know, if there's any sort of issue like the Inez Sanchez thing, you know, we specifically said scanty attire is not recommended. Some of the things that were, you know, I have been asked, is this gender specific? And it's not. But some of the things that were said were, no transparent tops, no things that are too cut too short, or, you know, too much cleavage.
I cannot wear my leather chaps.
Yeah,
to the game
I do not
anymore.
Want to see too much cleavage from you.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, it's actually all just very common sense, practical things. But when I boiled it down for the BBWA yesterday, I said, don't dress like a hobo and don't dress like a hoe. That's really what, it's kind of the two extremes. And you would hope you don't have to tell people that.
I've been to spring training games, and you do.
Yeah, you do have to. It's a strange one, but yeah.
We got some questions from fans. Mm-hmm. Is the hat okay?
I love the hat.
Is, okay, and the earrings okay?
Sure.
Tattoos, someone asked about.
Huh. I would only have to be answer. It really depends. You know, but I think that's a case-by-case basis.
Let's say there was a writer out there, and he was dressed, he had khakis on, he had a shirt with a collar, but had short sleeves like this one, but he was covered in sleeves.
Yeah.
Would that be okay?
Well, we did not address tattoos, which is probably good, because really, speaking personally, it really does, you know, tattoos look fine on some people, and they just look terrible on some other people, but, you know, that makes me think, you know, you're covering the players, most of the players now.
Yeah, a lot of it.
Lots of tattoos, so it would be a little strange to say, you media can't have tattoos,
right?
But the players can. But when we were going through these guidelines with the committee, I realized that the A's general manager would fall short on many of these things. I kept saying no shorts, no flip-flops, and I was like, well, have you ever seen how Billy Bean dresses? He would not. Are you telling the media they can't wear flip-flops and shorts during spring training when the GM's always in flip-flops and shorts?
Right, right.
He's beyond casual, so.
But he's Billy Bean.
He is Billy Bean, and these are media guidelines and not general manager guidelines. But and,
well, you could, you know, if Brad Pitt plays you in a movie, you can wear flip-flops and shorts.
You can do whatever you want, I guess. But I very much doubt this is ever going to be an issue.
Right.
My understanding is it's only ever going to come up if somebody actually complains, which is very unlikely. You'd probably have to do something pretty extreme to have anyone complain. Or if you're a repeat offender with something like flip-flops, which the trainers have specifically said is hygiene. And there are writers who do wear flip-flops, so that is something that maybe could happen. But I don't think they can pull a credential. I think they can just say, remember, we have these guidelines, and then tell your sports editor, remember, we have these guidelines, and then hope maybe that the standards go up a little. I think that's the main goal.
Have you been surprised at the reaction? Just, I mean, there has been...
I'm getting a little bit of flack.
I mean, you're getting some flack. There's been some accusations, and I know you've already defended it without being asked to about it being... There's some gender specificity to it and things like that.
We were very careful not to be gender specific, and I think if these things
It's hard to define skirt length without being seen as gender specific, just because not many baseball writers were men who wore skirts.
That's true. I wish we could have had a little more kilts. I guess maybe that would be in...
Would a kilt be okay?
Absolutely.
Because a kilt would be
nice. If it was 3 to 4 inches in length,
okay.
I think that would be fine. What is that? That's the hurling kind of thing that you would get kilts in that, I guess, not in baseball so much.
Oh boy, looks Scottish. I mean, how would I know? That's like Kevin Goldstein. But Kevin, I guess, maybe.
Yes, that's very Scottish, isn't it?
Thanks for doing this, Susan. Thanks for having a sense of humor about it.
Yeah, no, my pleasure.
As promised, we tried this on Monday. And we couldn't get her. But tonight, on Wednesday night, we have Yolanda, the media room security lady. Yolanda, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
We are good. Now, Yolanda, what is your job here as the media room security lady?
Make sure everybody got some badge to get in. If not, they cannot get in.
Now, how many people have tried to sneak in without a badge?
None so far. Thank God.
And what would happen if somebody tried to sneak in without a badge?
I'll put a stop to it before they even try to walk in.
Are you armed?
No, I don't need to be armed. Just my smile.
It's a million-dollar smile. Now, because Jason and I are friendly people, we're good-looking people, you know, we like you. We have a friend named Jorge who's not
Jorge?
Here. Yeah, Jorge. Not a good person.
No.
But he's a baseball writer, uh-huh. And he probably would have a badge. Uh-huh. If we asked you not to let Jorge in.
I would not let him in. If he don't have a badge, he would not.
No, but if he had a badge, but we said don't do it because we don't like Jorge. Would you do that as a favor to us?
I can't stop it. As long as he got a badge, he got to come in. But if you're trying to put a joke on him, I'll do it.
Yolanda, thanks so much for coming on the show. You've made our highlight of our show.
You're welcome. Thank you.